Welcome to Growing Up in America on KPFT Houston Pacifica Radio with our host from Children at Risk, noted child activist Dr. Bob Sanborn and Chief Operating Officer Dr. Katie McConnell. What do we have on tap today, Bob and Katie?
Hey.
How's it going, Katie?
It's great. How are you?
Very good.
Good.
Chief Operating Officer Katie McConnell.
That's me. So happy to be back in the studio for the second week in a row.
Well, the studio's happy to have you back.
I'm certain it is. I could tell by the traffic outside how happy it was to have you.
Yeah, here in lovely Montrose, we have some traffic. And Mandy is off.
She is. She's spending up the last couple of days of vacation getting her babes ready for school on Wednesday.
Those kids ready.
Like so many kids across the city that head back.
Summer's over. So you ready to do the show again, though? I mean, you love doing Growing Up in America, though, right?
I do, actually. It reminds me of my old days on an elementary campus where I had to do the morning announcements every day. It's just like that, but a little bit different.
Yeah, just a little bit different.
A little bit different.
Back in the principal days, right?
That's right.
So today we have a great show. First off, in the studio with us, we have a bunch of pediatricians.
So many pediatricians.
Dr. Bikini, one of our favorite pediatricians, is here in the studio, so we're excited to have her with us. And so that should be good. We'll talk a little bit about that. But we're going to start off the day's show, Staff Attorney Caroline Roberts, with the number of the day. She's our data head. The number of the day. What are you thinking? It's 18.
The number is 18.
What
I can't help
be?
But think that doesn't have something to do with school-age children and services and age-related
18.
To services.
I don't know. 18 is what I'm thinking.
Because you're just grown when you're 18, right? Is that how it works in this world?
We will see. You know what? We're going to be able to tell you.
We will.
Here in just a moment.
Caroline will be able to update us.
Yep.
And we also have After Data Head, the CEO of iEducate USA, Arun Gur, and he will be talking about their approach to tutoring, which involves pairing college students with teachers to help tutor elementary students, which you know I'm so excited to talk to him about.
iEducate USA.
It's
like
so
little
exciting.
I. Like little I, you know, like the iPhone.
Like,
this is the trendy thing to do, to put the little I in front of stuff, right?
Absolutely.
So one of these days for pediatricians will be like little iDocs. Right, don't you think? Dr. Bikini, what do you think? That's a nice little idea, isn't it?
It's very cute.
A little eye doc there. So, Dr. Bikini, by the way, you know how I always say you're my favorite pediatrician?
Yes, amongst many favorite pediatricians.
I know. But the other day I was at a deal,
and
someone said, I thought I was your favorite pediatrician.
Oh.
It was our good friend, Dr. Greeley.
Oh,
right?
Yes. Yeah, well, like, I mean, you have a lot of favorite pediatricians.
That's right.
Mm-hmm.
But you know you're like my favorite. And Dr. Greeley listens to this.
Yes. Yeah, so, hi, Dr. Greeley.
Yeah, yeah. So,
you're one of my favorite pediatricians.
Yeah, don't you think?
Yeah.
I think in the pediatrician realm, as child advocates, it's safe to have at least half a dozen favorite pediatricians. Because we've got a lot of work
safe.
To do, right?
And
a
usually
lot of work
when
to
you
do.
See pediatricians, it's part of a practice anyway. So it's
absolutely.
Like you should have a lot six
That's
favorite
just like we've got three sitting right here in the studio.
I know, and they're
with
wonderful.
Yeah, they're our
they are. Exactly. Today's favorite pediatricians right here.
iDocs. Little I.
iDocs.
iDocs. So don't you think that's... We need to like market that or something, right?
Yeah, we'll save that for next week.
Another
How about
day.
That?
Another
yeah,
day.
We'll start talking marketing strategies.
After Arun Gur from iEducate, we're going to be talking with my good buddy Dustin Renders. He's the attorney for Disability Rights Texas. He's the head guy over there. And he's going to be talking to us about school safety after Parkland, after Santa Fe. Dustin and I have been on a few programs together, and so he's got a lot to say. They're doing some great work over there at Disability.
They are,
Disability
and I know that's
at
something
Texas.
That's on a lot of people's minds, again, is so many kids are heading back to school this week. What kind of school environment are they walking into? So then we'll have our social conscience scale.
Yes, we love that.
Where we're going to encourage everyone to call in, thumbs up, thumbs down, no fence sitting. Today's topic.
Yeah, what's the topic today?
This is an interesting one,
is
Dr.
It?
Bum.
Yeah.
Drag queen story time. And this comes as
this is a little out of the ordinary for
it
us.
It is a little out of the ordinary, but libraries across the country, including here in Houston, have been hosting a reading hour featuring drag queens that just come to the library and read to the kids.
Can you get enough reading? Right? I feel like you need more reading all the time. And the more interesting the character is reading to you, the better. So I'm going out on a limb. But it's early. I should
it
not
is.
Be going
We're
out
not quite
limb.
There yet
for
you to take your stance. But I do think it's a very interesting concept. Some of our city council members have come out and spoken out against drag queen.
Yeah.
Reading hour.
They don't like Santa Claus either, I understand.
Well, so, or the Tooth Fairy.
Or reading in general.
In general, it's bad. So it'll be an interesting conversation to just hear, you know, in the name of literacy, is this an appropriate thing?
And all that is good in this world.
That's right.
Yeah, very good.
That's right.
And then our final group of guests is our favorite pediatricians are here. Dr. Claire Bikini's with us. And Peggy, how do you pronounce your last name? Guo?
Guo.
Guo. There you go. I knew it all along. So Dr. Peggy's here. Kirthana, you pronounce it better when you introduce yourself to me, right? Kirthana.
Kirthana, yeah.
Kirthana, right. Dr. Kirthana Krasuri is here. Is that how you pronounce your last name?
That's absolutely correct.
Wow, yeah. Look at
very
that.
Very good, Dr. Bob. I'm impressed.
Yeah, so we'll go with that. And then also a couple of pediatricians, they're doing social media. Is that right? Dr. Kyle, Dr. Rebecca, Dr. Kristen?
Absolutely. They're back there kind of tweeting out some wonderful resources for you guys as you plan back to school.
If you want to follow them, what's the...
It's community_peds. But peds. We also will tweet at Children at Risk, and then we'll retweet.
Okay, that sounds really good.
Fantastic. I love a good retweet. Don't you, Dr. Bob?
Yeah, I love it. You know what? Can you get enough retweets?
It's like I always say.
Dr. Bikini, what are we talking about today? What are the key topics as we do the pediatrician roundtable?
Well, we have two topics. One is back-to-school safety, because as school's starting, there's a lot to think about.
Yeah, absolutely.
And then the other issue that we wanted to bring up is, you know, we keep seeing children who accidentally have firearm injuries or children who've tried to commit suicide. And so as we get back to school, we wanted to again talk about firearm safety.
And
exactly. It just, I mean, we keep seeing it over and over and over, and it's just... something we really want to address.
Are we going to talk about the flu shots? I mean, it seems like we always talk about
Shots, probably in about one more month, we should be talking about flu shots.
Do we have any indication because of Australia what the flu season is going to look like?
Well, we're hoping that the vaccine will be a better match, although last year it did protect kids from complications from the flu or dying from the flu. And so we're hopeful, actually, that this vaccine, you know, they made some adjustments, and so it looks very well matched to what was circulating in other parts of the world.
But you can never tell, do you?
I mean, you never know for sure until the season starts.
Because even sometimes it's bad in Australia, and then it's a different thing here, right?
Oh, definitely. Yeah, we never know. But the flu vaccine remains the best way you can protect your child from complications or dying from the flu.
And it's Dr. Bob and Dr. Bikini are on the same page on this,
aren't we? Yep, and I look forward to talking about this in more detail in a later show.
As we get closer to the infamous flu season.
That's right.
Very good. So, good show, right?
Sounds fantastic. I'm so excited to have Dr. Bikini and everybody here today. Yeah, We've got a lot of ground to cover.
And I'm excited to have Katie McConnell sitting next to me.
Thanks.
Right?
It's always a pleasure to be here.
Welcome to Growing Up in America here on KPFT, Houston Pacifica Radio. This is a discussion on our children, public policy, politics, and our future. And how do we as a nation do when it comes to taking care of all of our kids? Every single one of those kids. Are you taking care of the kids? You're taking care of the kids, Katie.
I'm trying my best to take care of the kids.
Yeah, well, you're doing a good job.
Thanks.
But, you know, we're here in Texas. We could be doing a better job in
Texas,
right?
That's right. There's always room for improvement, no matter what you're doing.
Always a lot of room for improvement. So with me, Katie McConnell, I'm Dr. Bob. And are we ready for a little data head?
Let's kick it off.
Ha! It wasn't a really good ha. It was like it was almost like I was clearing my throat almost.
Well,
you know?
That was good. I hope it's appropriate for this number, though, so it doesn't seem odd. Actually, Caroline had an entrance into the office today that really had, she nailed the ha. She did. The unfortunate part was I had my earphones on in the office and I missed it, but she assured me that her entrance was fantastic.
It was good. So. Caroline Robbins is online with us. Caroline is the staff attorney over at Children at Risk. Caroline, how are you doing?
Great. How are you?
Very good. Very good. All right, Caroline, you sound enthusiastic to be here. What is the number today?
So the number is 18.
18. What does that mean, Caroline?
So we are 18 days past the deadline given by U.S. District Court to reunify families that were separated at the border.
Oh, separating. This is one of my favorite topics, as you know, Katie, to talk about.
Important.
This horrendous stuff that's going on the border, family separation. We're 18 days past the deadline. Caroline, what does this mean? I mean, can you hold the United States government in contempt for not returning these kids to their parents?
You could, but that's unlikely to happen.
Yeah.
In the past 7 days, 1,569 families have been reunited, so they are making progress. But it also is kind of, to me, indicative of the fact that they could be doing this a lot faster, and they're going to kind of drag their feet about it.
Well, sure, Caroline, if I could ask you about this just real quick. We had last week on the show, Ann Chandler was on, and she was talking about how at that point in time, hardly any reunifications had taken place. What has happened in the last 7 days that's changed? Is it just that we're that far over the deadline that we're going to make things happen?
Another court order was issued down, really urging them. And then now, you know, the court has indicated that they are happy with the recent progress, but there was basically nothing done until the past week.
But 1,000 families in 1 week is a lot.
It is a lot.
How many do we have to go, though, Caroline?
I'm not sure exactly on those numbers, but I know pretty much all of the families that were deported, that's around 700, they have not been reunited, but they are in touch with now a lot of those families, although some they have not even been able to locate. So that's kind of the new focus, is really focusing on those families that aren't even in the U.S. anymore.
So how many families are out of the country and still missing their kids?
I think it's about 700.
Wow, that's a travesty as well.
That is a travesty. And I think as we're sitting here amongst our pediatricians, the impact that that is having on our sweet kids that are in these detention centers, not with parents, and kind of with no hope in sight.
Dr. Bikini, talk a little bit about that. I mean, when we see this family separation, we sometimes see it in the foster care system already in the United States. We have a history in this country of separating families, and every time we do, we say it's a travesty, we say it's horrible. Throughout our history, we reflect upon how horrible it is, yet we continue to do it. What is the impact on these kids?
Yeah, unfortunately, it has a huge impact on these kids, and, you know, it causes both mental and physical health problems.
Yeah.
You know, it causes toxic stress, which we've talked about on the show before, which, you know, causes changes to the child's body, and it actually results in a lot of long-term health problems like heart disease, strokes, diabetes as they get older. But then the immediate issues is that you have children who are just suffering so much, you know, mental health distress, and they have no resiliency. They don't have their parents to support them as they go through all of these things. I mean, separating parents from children is just a terrible thing to do to a child, and has really long-term mental and physical health impacts. And so from the standpoint of, you know, being a pediatrician, we really try to keep families together, and we try to keep kids out of, you know, jails and other those types
and
of things.
And I think, again, we've mentioned several times about it being back to school week, you know, being an educator at heart, I can't help but think what impact those situations have on their long-term education.
A big impact, yeah.
And then, as well as school starting this week, where are those kids going to be going to school? Are they getting any sort of tutoring services or anything while they're there and separated from their families?
Caroline Roberts, as an attorney, do you see any hope around this? I mean, is there hope in the long run? Is this something that, because the court has mandated, even though we're 18 days past, that there's going to be a conclusion to this?
I think so. I think that the progress that's been made in the past week is reason for a lot of hope. And frankly, for the fact that there were, you know, there's basically no plan in place for reunifying the families, in some ways it's very impressive that they've been able to reunify as many families as they have been. But, you know, I also hope that this will never be something that happens again in our country's future.
If you're a betting woman, Caroline, next week, next Monday, when we're on the air, will all these families be reunited?
No, I don't think so. I wouldn't bet on that.
You know, Caroline was starting to give me a little bit of
25 days
hope
later
there, and then she kind of brought it back to reality. We have to keep talking about it. We have to make sure that these kids are getting what they need. Otherwise, they're not going to get the attention, and who knows how long it will be.
Well,
until
I feel like it was a month and a half, 2 months ago that, Katie, that you and I were outraged, and then we had this big press conference Dallas, the big one in Houston, and the president said, all right, we're going to stop this. We thought, in a sense, we thought we had won a battle.
So many people, people still think, the executive order was issued, so the situation was handled.
But it's not over.
When, in fact, as Caroline has identified, for the first month and a half following that executive order, nothing was done.
Very good. Caroline Roberts is a staff attorney over at Children at Risk. working on a lot of great issues. Caroline, thank you so much for what you do, and thank you so much for being on Growing Up in America today.
Thank you for having me.
All righty. Take care. Bye-bye. You're listening to Growing Up in America on KPFT Pacifica Radio. It's Katie McConnell.
And Dr. Bob Sanborn.
So you ready to – this is – you've been looking forward to iEducate USA for some time, right?
I have been. So I'm so excited.
We have a little theme music for our room, I wonder. You know this song, Katie?
I don't. I'm sitting here racking through my
It's Hall & Oates Adult Education. So I don't know who picked this out.
I'm interested in the song, but I'm more interested in what Arun has to say. How are you?
You think Arun, did you pick that theme song out for yourself?
No, but I'm going to have to save that for our next presentation.
Well, actually, I'm sort of glad you did pick it out. So, Arun, for those of us who are new to this idea of iEducate USA, give us sort of the quick rundown. What do you guys do?
Well, okay, so simply put, we work with school districts to engage and empower youth, meaning college and high school students, to serve in the classroom in various roles, really to help close achievement gaps at a foundational level. So early education up until the end of fifth grade.
That is so fantastic. So exciting to hear. What you specifically identified, you know, you're speaking my language here. You're talking about at-risk students and underperforming and community empowerment. What were some of those factors that you identified that said, hey, this would be a good solution to this problem?
Well, if we look at, you know, the underperforming schools, let's just take Harris County, for example, you know, outside of all the, you know, the community-specific issues that each, you know, school district or each individual school might face, we see really two factors that are consistent across all these schools. The first is that the classroom model that exists today, which has existed for decades, has not adapted to the needs of our population today. One teacher cannot address all the learning levels in a classroom of 25 kids, even at the elementary level. And that's recognized even by the Commissioner of Education for the state. The other thing is that, in these underserved communities, these low-income communities, students might not have that value, that fundamental appreciation for education if it's not bestowed upon them by their family or by their immediate environment. So why would they ever see, you know, math or science or reading beyond just a test question if they've never really understood what it means or what it can offer for their future?
And what does it mean, Arun, for these kids to have another kid, in a sense, a little bit older, teaching or tutoring them? I mean, that must be sort of exciting for them.
Yeah, you know, automatically they're in between that of a teacher. You know, all these college students and you know, during the school year, our core program is having college students work in a co-teaching capacity. So yeah, they're there alongside the teacher, and it's almost like a, like an older brother or sister in between that authority figure of the teacher and their peers in the classroom. So it's like having an older friend, but at the same time, an idol and a mentor that they can look up to. Most importantly, they look like them, they talk like them, and they are the physical manifestation of what it means to be successful in academics and achieve, you know, your potential.
And I would imagine, too, it's probably other kids from their community as well, right? So if it's a high school-age student going into an elementary campus, odds are they're from somewhere around those. So there are other relatable aspects, if you will, that really helps them foster that value for education.
Certainly, and that's what we focus greatly on in our placement process, is we want, you know, students who look and talk and sound like the students they're serving, because it helps them establish that relationship.
That's right.
You know, immediately.
And when you're in a particular school, Arun, how many of these students are you bringing in? How many volunteers? How many people do you have working on a particular school?
So, you know, we're still pretty new as an organization.
Yeah.
We're in the latter stages of our pilot, so we haven't expanded to our full model, which is really covering second or third grade through fifth grade. We have a couple schools in that you know, that have been fully implemented. And at those schools, we have about 18 to 20 college students across, you know, all the grade levels working in those classrooms. Typically how it works is there's someone there in the classroom every day, but as you can imagine, college students have classes too.
Yeah.
So they work on the days they're not in class, and we place them so that there's a perfect complement going on. College student A is there Monday, Wednesday, while B is there Tuesday, Thursday, Friday.
That's so great.
They're there throughout the entire year.
You know, it's so interesting. I think it's probably, you know, absolutely intended to help those second through fifth graders, right? But what an invaluable experience for those college kids that are getting that experience. Who knows? Maybe they could end up becoming teachers and realizing that that is something that they're passionate about and want to pursue.
Are they paid or are they volunteers? How does that work, Arun?
They're paid, and they get paid $12 an hour, so it's very competitive pay, and majority of that is supported by school districts. And then we have foundations and corporations that help, you know, subsidize that cost as well. But, yeah, we're in 27 schools today and about 250 college students participating. But the exciting thing to me is that 80% of those college students are STEM major college students.
Oh,
they have no interest
great.
In becoming teachers, but they're involved in 1 to 2 years of work in a teaching capacity. And some of them do end up converting or applying to Teach for America or getting their certification.
Yeah.
So we love seeing that happen too.
And can you use college work study students to do this as well?
Yes, and we have very strong partnerships with a couple of the colleges and universities around work study. So those mm-hmm. who are eligible for it, this is the perfect place for them
yeah.
to
this
look,
seems like such a great community collaboration. Mm-hmm. You are really incorporating so many different elements, and it sounds like everybody wins in this scenario.
Yeah, I mean, the best part is that all the money spent here stays within education. This is meant to be a way for those who have succeeded beyond high school and are entering college to make college more affordable, support their tuition by serving their community and giving back. So it's a clear double bottom line. And, you know, we surveyed our college students, and I think it was something like 95% of them said that they're using this money to support their tuition. And almost half of them are first generation college students themselves. So these are those same students they're serving. They're just, you know, they are the role models who can help uplift the next generation. So there's a cycle here, and we want to see that cycle really fulfill itself.
Arun Geer is the CEO of iEducate USA. Hey, Arun, if people want to learn more about you, what's your web address? Is it just iEducateUSA.org, or what is it?
Yes, that is it. And, you know, my email address is my first name, Arun@iEducateUSA.org. So I'm welcome anyone to send me a note with any thoughts, ideas, interest in collaboration. Happy to talk to anyone.
Yeah, very good.
Awesome. Thank you so much for talking to us today, Arun, and best of luck this school year as things are just gearing up.
I appreciate it. Thanks
All
for
right.
having me, guys.
Thanks for being on Growing Up in America. Take care. Bye-bye. You're listening to Growing Up in America on Pacifica Radio, 90.1 KPFT. You ready to move on to Dustin Renders, our good buddy Dustin Renders?
I am ready to
move
on.
Do we have some good theme music for Dustin? Back to school. This must be from an older Grease. I saw that it's from Grease. Back to school, Grease. Maybe Grease 2 or something?
I'm not sure which one, but I definitely know this
song. You know
this song? I didn't know Hall & Oates before, but I know this one.
I think this is Dustin's all-time favorite song. I'm not
Dustin
sure.
Dustin requested this song.
Dustin Renders is with Disability Texas. Dustin, how you doing, man?
Doing great. Thanks for having me.
Very good. Disability Rights Texas. How long you been there, Dustin? You've been there quite a while, right?
I have. About 13 years now.
Wow, oh, wow. Yeah. That's great.
As long as I've been at Children at Risk. Yeah. So, hey, Dustin, when you we have you down as you're talking about school safety, what is it that you guys do around school safety?
So, really, it's as it relates to the school-to-prison pipeline.
Yeah.
So, you know, we're seeing a lot of cases of kids who, you know, everyone's scared of, but they're not getting the services they need. So it's really around improving their behavior supports and other services and to keep them from being unfairly disciplined. So that's primarily our work. And also, as at the policy level, as states look into what they're doing, making sure that they're thinking of the needs of students with disabilities as a part of that process.
So when we talk about school safety, what are some of the things that we're not often thinking about when it comes to students with disabilities?
So, you know, some of the training that area districts have been receiving in Texas includes suggestions that if you have to evacuate students with disabilities last. And, of course, that's just patently offensive.
Wow, that's ridiculous.
And you know, it's hard to explain. And so that's the kind of policy that we're fighting against, and just making sure that when people come up with whatever their campus plans are, whether it's for a natural disaster or God forbid, a school shooter, that people are thinking about all students on their campus.
So what comes to mind is when I hear that policy is, like, what were they thinking?
Right.
No, I can't even get to that point. Like, I missed half of what you just said, Dustin. I'm sorry. That
right.
is just...
So what's the deal with that, Dustin?
You know, I can't pretend to understand it either. I do think that, unfortunately, students with disabilities and their families often feel like an afterthought for schools. And so from the time you go in campus, I can always know that the meeting I'm there for is going to be in the back of the school or in a portable or the basement, because that's where they tend to stick, students with disabilities. And unfortunately, that seems too often to be emblematic of how schools are planning around students with disabilities. You know, whatever funding may be left after athletics, we can start thinking about special education services.
Yeah. This is probably for you and Disability Rights Texas sort of a never-ending battle, isn't it? I mean, in a state like Texas where you talk about, you know, sports first, I mean, it's you're probably battling this stuff all the time.
You know, we are. And, you know, unfortunately, what we found after the tragedy in Santa Fe is that there has been just an increasing number of students with disabilities whose parents are calling us saying, you know, my 10, 11-year-old child's being charged with felony-level assault by threat or terroristic threat or exhibition of a firearm. And at first, I assumed that exhibition of a firearm meant that you actually had a firearm. And I thought, well, you know, that's understandable. Well,
yeah.
What we ended up finding out is that all of this was for kids mouthing off. In Texas, you can be charged with exhibition of a firearm even if you've never had a firearm, if you just talk about it.
Are you firing off
charged.
Hate or firing off sarcasm? I mean, that is...
No, hate is accepted. It's other things.
It's the other things you're not allowed to verbally fire out. Yeah. I mean, wow.
So, you know, we've had a 600% increase since Parkland in Texas-based felony school-driven charges for exhibition of a firearm. And what's so surprising about that is that the majority of them are for 10 to 13-year-olds, so really pretty young kids, and African-American students are twice as represented
oh, wow.
as others. And, of course, you know, if we know one thing about the profile of a school shooter, it's not a 10-year-old African-American kid, right? And so
yeah.
Something about the natural, I think, impulses of campuses in this scary time haven't gotten us where we need to be. And so what we can understand that everyone was scared after Parkland and Santa Fe, but we need to really guide people towards research-based interventions to make schools safer and really away from just treating everything like a law enforcement issue and all the disproportionalities that happen when we do that.
So, Dustin, can you talk to us a little bit about some of those research-based interventions that you're talking about
sure.
as we're moving, again, with the school year starting this week in Houston?
That's right. I think what we found, and I did Public Information Act requests for the 20 districts, you know, around the Houston area, and what we found is that almost none of them had a real protocol for what to do when a kid mouths off and makes a threat. So you're kind of relying on the good instincts and training of educators who really aren't trained in addressing threat as much as they are in educating kids. And so what you find is that there's just this process of referring kids to law enforcement. But a better practice would be to really have some training and protocol around responding to a threat. And so there's a Virginia-based threat assessment model that's had three peer-reviewed studies that have found it to be effective, not only in keeping campuses safe, but also in reducing disproportionalities and in overuse of law enforcement. And what that program does is it slows everyone down to sit down and answer some pretty common sense questions. Does this child have access to a firearm? Mm-hmm. Does this child have a disability? What are other things going on in this child's life? in most cases, that ends up leading you to the conclusion that this kid isn't an actual serious threat at that moment, but that they may be communicating a need to address some bullying issue that's happening at school, to get some mental health treatment.
I was going to say a number, right, a number of other issues that could be going on that this behavior is just manifesting to, who knows, maybe get out of doing a math assignment. You know, I mean, there's a number of different things when we see behavior like that.
Hey, Dustin, before we let you go, earlier in the hour we were talking about the children on the border, and I know a number of these children that have been put into facilities have special education needs. Are you seeing, has Disability Rights Texas been involved with that at all?
Yes, we're monitoring facilities, and so me and other members of my team have been going into facilities using our Federal Protection and Advocacy Authority to make sure that the kids are being treated fairly, looking into any misuse of medication, also making sure that the children receive an education. And, of course, it's a heartbreaking situation that all of these children are in, and I have some limitations to what I can share about it, but we are very engaged in this work.
Are they getting the education they need, Dustin?
So, unfortunately, I would say no.
Yeah.
What the Office of Refugee Resettlement, which contracts with the facilities, says that they only get a very basic education in the time that they're in a shelter. And the idea is that you wouldn't stay in a shelter very long. Unfortunately, because of some changes in policies, children who may have previously stayed in a shelter less than a month are sometimes now staying 5-6 months. And so, you know, a child's educational needs are very different if you're in a place where you're only going to be there a short while versus somewhere you're going to spend more than a semester.
Wow. I mean, we could probably go on and on.
I was going to say, I was like, so, Dustin, we will continue. We'll take a quick break and talk for another 30 minutes.
Dustin, can we have you back just to talk about some of the border issues? Would that be okay?
I'm happy to talk about border issues, school finance, anything you like.
Yeah.
Oh, also school finance. That's one of my most favorite things to talk about.
Well, we have a lot on disability. The Chronicle just reported that TEA is asking for $3 billion more for special ed services.
That was with a B.
Billion with a B.
All right.
Yeah, they need it. That's for sure. Dustin Renders is with Disability Rights Texas. Hey, Dustin, thank you for what you do, and thank you for being on Growing Up in America.
No problem. Thank you.
All righty. Take care. Bye-bye. You're listening to Growing Up in America here on 90.1 KPFT. Are you ready for a little thumbs up, thumbs down?
Absolutely.
Boom. Boom, Katie McConnell.
Boom.
We're talking about Drag Queen Reading Hour.
We absolutely are, Dr. Bob.
Tell me a little bit about this.
We are talking about public libraries that are inviting drag queens in for a reading hour with children of all ages.
So thumbs up to Drag Queen Reading Hours, or thumbs down, you don't want the reading hour, right?
That's right. Thumbs down, this is not an appropriate
713-526-5738, 713-526-5738. Thumbs up to Drag Queen Reading Hour. Why would anyone be against this idea of children reading, right? Why is that, Katie?
I think it has, honestly, it has nothing to do with literacy, right? It has shocking, right? It has to do, I think, a lot with people's misconceptions. Some of the arguments that have been put out there, and just to be very clear, these aren't necessarily isn't my position, but just some of the arguments that it confuses kids, and very simple statements like that man is in a dress. I'm just going over what the arguments are right now. I'm talking myself out of this, and I'm trying to argue with myself as well. One of the issues that came up in Houston, actually, was that it was the use of taxpayer dollars that was
a problem. But it wasn't really using dollars. They were just doing it in public libraries.
They were in the library.
So if you did it in a public park, you'd make the same argument if you wanted to be wrong as
well.
That's
right.
On that.
So, if you wanted to be wrong as well.
Hey, Dr. Bikini, let me ask you this. If Drag Queen Reading Hour, let's say that you were, let's say we're in Minnesota and you're the head of the hospital, the Minneapolis Children's Hospital, and they wanted to do Drag Queen Reading Hour at the Children's Hospital, what would you say?
Well, I think things that promote inclusion and diversity and just, trying to kind of celebrate the, you know, our diversity in our community are good things.
Yeah.
And so
helps to destigmatize.
Yes,
things.
I think that's important. And so, you know, this is something I actually did not know about until just now.
Well, we aim to be on the cutting edge here,
well,
growing up in America.
Thank you. Yeah, I know.
And if
yeah.
Drag Queen Reading Hour isn't on the cutting edge, I don't know what is.
Exactly. So there would be people that would say, no, I don't want this at my children's hospital, or I don't want this in my public library. But indeed, we live in a world where literacy is a good thing, and no matter who's reading, it's exposing kids. And here's the other thing. Frankly, for a lot of kids, they just like to go listen to someone read, right? I mean, to them, it's not about who's reading it. It's just the reading.
Absolutely an adult issue. It has nothing, in my opinion, has nothing to do with kids or what they think or they might perceive. If it's a good story and it is being delivered in an engaging way, they're going to be hooked. Yeah. And that's all they care about.
So what are you saying? Thumbs up or thumbs down?
I'm thumbs up.
Yeah, you like it?
Yeah, I like things that promote, again, inclusion, diversity, exposure to people who, you know, I think it's, I wouldn't necessarily say that it's a, it's not necessarily, doesn't matter who's reading. I think it's important for us to kind of celebrate that there's a lot of diversity in our community and that that should be celebrated.
That's right. And so that might be the one reason I can come up with a thumbs down. Just that in this situation, it is limited to drag queens. But we really do have a community full of all different interests and cultures and ethnicities and sexual orientation, all of those things that our kids need to be exposed mm-hmm. to because it's reality. So the only thumbs down would be just limiting it to the specific drag queen hour. I commend them for what they're doing.
Dr. Peggy, what do you think about this idea, this drag queen reading hour? Would you have it at your children's hospital?
I think that having drag queens read to the children would be actually really helpful because it will help them engage. They're seeing something new. They're seeing maybe someone who has experience in performing read out loud yeah. children's story for them. So I could also engage them. So I think that would be really helpful.
Dr. Kirthin, what are you thinking on this one? Are you a thumbs up on this?
I'm a thumbs up, yeah. I mean, a drag queen is a performer.
Right. It's a really, you it's know, talking about an actor.
Right.
You know, I'm wondering, I said this, it's almost, they're just going to say, why is that, kids are just going to say, why is that lady here reading? Right.
Right.
Is it just, I mean, they're not even going to get it probably.
Odds are, they're not, like I said, this is a grown-up issue. This is not a kid issue. This is not a literacy issue. This is an adult issue pushing our.
Actually, frankly, having seen drag queens, they're probably a heck of a lot entertaining. A lot more entertaining than grandma coming to read, right?
I don't know. Through the course of the years, I've seen some pretty entertaining grandmas.
I bet you Grandma McConnell was pretty entertaining. So,
well, yeah, that's
I'm just saying
a fair statement.
Dr. Bikini, was your grandma pretty entertaining? She,
yeah. I mean, my both grandmothers, yes, wonderful.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like good storytellers.
We're not going to talk poorly about our grandmothers, right?
No, so, they're wonderful.
Yeah, very good.
Yeah.
All right, so that's, I think we're, do we have a call, Don? We have one call trying to get in, just trying to, because, but Don, can you imagine anyone being against, I guess I can't imagine people being against drag queen reading hour, right?
I could see Don's look through the glass just then. Like, of course, I can imagine
yeah.
someone being against
there are
it.
People.
I'm
there
not.
There are people.
But I can see it.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. So let's go with Larry's on the line with us. Larry, how you doing, man?
I'm doing great. I really enjoy your show when I'm out running around trying to make a living.
Thanks, Larry. What do you think of this drag queen?
I'm an old codger. I'm 66. And my question would be, what about Mrs. Doubtfire?
Right. Yeah, she.
You know, in that character, Robin Williams loved his kids so much that he changed his appearance just so he could be around them. If you
yeah.
had somebody that's willing to donate their time to go to the library and read to children, I don't think it should matter if they're straight or gay or bi or whatever. That has nothing to do with your ability to read and entertain the children.
I just had this picture, Larry. Hello!
The Mrs. Doubtfire,
yes,
hello.
Exactly.
Yeah, yeah.
But I think Larry brings up a great point. We always talk about different ways we can engage our community to support our kids, support children's education. And this is just another example of, albeit a very marginalized population, but really trying to contribute to the improvement of our community.
Hey, Larry, thanks for calling in, man.
Thanks, Larry.
No problem. Keep good work up.
Hey, thank you so much. If you have a phone call, if you want to do thumbs up, thumbs down, 713-526-5738. Should we go on the line? Bob, we got Bob on the line. Bob, how you doing today, man?
I'm doing great. I just wanted to make a suggestion.
Sure.
To add to the diversity for the reading hour ideas. When I go to Pride, in addition to the drag queens, also see a lot of these guys dressed as leather puppies being walked around. Maybe we should have
Bob, you're like pulling our leg here.
That would be inclusive.
There's all sorts of things, right, Bob? I mean,
yeah.
we could have you there, and that would be like that'd be a big old deal too. I mean, there's all sorts of. Hey, Bob, thanks for calling in, man.
Thank you.
Very good. So, Bob is the. Like sense of humor.
No, he does, and I appreciate that. But that was kind of my point, right? We have to include everybody, but also, thank you, Bob. We do, at some point, have to draw a line.
I could go on and on. I could riff off of Bob, but I'm not going to. So.
But for the sake of the pediatricians that we have here in the office that are just chomping at the bit to get to the meat of some of your topic, we probably need to move
on. Dr. McKinney, we could do is there a pediatrician, like an iDoc reading hour?
Well, there should be. We certainly try to promote literacy in our clinics and hand out books and do a little bit of reading. We have reading at our clinics. It's important.
It is very important, and it's something we should all value.
Yeah. Hey, thanks for the phone calls. You're listening to Growing Up in America, KPFT 90.1 Pacifica Radio, and I'm ready for the theme song for our pediatricians. Doctor, give me the news, because I've got a bad case. This is hard.
I feel like that's your life to a T. You're always just a little bit ahead of the curve right there, Dr. Bob. You're always just right there. Ready.
Don, could you remind me a little raise for Katie is probably due, right?
Yeah.
That's probably right there.
Well played.
No. So in the studio, with us is... Dr. Claire Bikini, who's one of our favorite pediatrician, my personal favorite pediatrician, and I can't wait, Dr. Bikini, till we get to the final 454, because I'm just going to predict everything that you're going to say.
So, I think you could, yeah.
Yeah, I think probably. With Dr. Bikini today, we have Dr. Peggy Guo, and she's also a pediatric resident, and with her as well is Dr. Kirthan Krasuri. And so thank you guys both for being here. And we want to talk a little bit about back-to-school safety. What is who's gonna start with back-to-school safety? Dr. Kirthan, what is the big – and when we talk about kids going back to school, what's the big thing that parents should be aware of?
I would say one of the big things to be aware of is that you don't need to wait until the first day of school to start thinking about safety.
Yeah. Why is that? I mean, what are the dangers of going back to school?
I guess one thing to think about is how your child is going to react to being in a new situation.
Yeah.
Safety in terms of how to go to school, what you need to be thinking about while you're there, interacting with other students. Lots of things to think about.
Dr. Peggy, are schools different today than they used to be? As a parent who went to school, are there different safety concerns today than there were a number of years ago? I'm probably asking you guys all the wrong questions, right? You weren't prepared for my questions. Dr. Bikini, were they ready for me?
Oh, well, I told them you could go off script, and that's good. Because I think
you could.
Yeah. No, but I think you're touching on some of the same things. I mean, we do see a lot of differences now versus before, and I've seen a big shift. You know, one of the things we do as pediatricians is ask kids about, you know, their life at home and at school. And we're hearing more and more kids talk about not feeling safe at school.
Yeah.
And that's just so sad to me because I loved school.
Right.
And there's a lot of reasons. And we know we certainly hear about school shootings, but I know one of the things that that you guys were going to talk about was bullying, and that's actually a big issue as well.
Dr. Peggy, talk a little bit about bullying and how different is it today than it used to be?
Well, in addition to bullying at school, so physical bullying or verbal bullying, there's also parents have to worry about cyberbullying. So even when kids are out of school, if they have time, if they're doing homework on their computer or if they have a phone that they talk to their kids talk to their friends on, you have to worry about what kind of messages they're getting and how they're communicating.
And
with
that
them.
Is a very different thing than maybe when a lot of parents went to school, when maybe the cyber world was there, being online, but not as developed as it is today.
Well, and somebody said something today as we were having a conversation in the office about, that's when MySpace was just coming. They were in high school when MySpace was just becoming a thing. And I kind of stopped for a second, and it was jarring because MySpace, that era wasn't that long ago. It is a completely different world for at least half of us sitting in this studio right now than when we were in high school as far as the cyberbullying is concerned.
And it's important for parents to teach their children, especially if they are newly received a phone or computer, teach them how to be safe on the internet, what is appropriate to put on the internet, and, everything on the internet
and
is
what's
permanent.
Not appropriate to put on the internet as well. That's just us.
Dr. Kirthan, Parkland and Santa Fe have brought gun violence into our schools in many ways, and gun violence into the lives of children, into the lives of families. I remember right after Parkland, I was on the news and I was talking about the idea that we live in a gun culture, right? I mean, this is part of the reality. We could say a lot of things about controlling it, but we live in this gun culture.
That's true.
What can schools and children and families do differently around this to be part of it, but to keep kids safe?
So one of the things that you can do in a school is one thing that actually we mentioned earlier is school safety plans in terms of what to do in an emergency or a disaster situation. And something else that can happen is safety at home if you're in a family that does own a gun. One thing the AAP recommends is to...
AAP being the...
The American Academy of Pediatrics recommends is making sure your gun is safely stored at home.
And that's a big deal, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, we see a lot of families, you see this in the emergency room, you see injuries because the gun at home was just not properly stored. We live in Texas, there are a lot of guns at home, and so you're seeing kids, and it's really just a matter of parents putting that gun in a gun safe, locking it away, not letting kids have access.
Right. One of the most important things you can do is make sure that your gun at home is unloaded, kept separate from the ammunition, and that it is locked. One of the studies we've seen shows that having guns that are both unloaded and locked away significantly reduces the chance of injury to a child.
That makes perfect sense. Yeah. I want to throw in the logic side here. Keeping your guns in that situation at home, unloaded, and that really makes sense that that would decrease the amount of incidents.
Tell me, Dr. Bikini, how often are we seeing these accidents in our emergency rooms?
Way too often. I mean, we see it all the time, and you see it reported in, the Houston News way too frequently. And, I think one of the things that parents don't think is, and there have been studies that have shown, a lot of parents think, oh, my gun's, hidden away. My child doesn't even know I have a gun. They don't know where it is. But the studies show one after another that kids actually know where the gun is. Then not only do they know that the family has a gun, but they know where it is and where it's stored. And so that is always surprising to families that the child actually even knew that there was a gun.
Yeah.
Kids as young as 2 to 3 years of age have enough force to be able to pull the trigger. And a lot of kids are just curious. And so unfortunately, we see a lot of young kids with accidental shootings. The other thing that I cannot emphasize enough is that if you have a child who, is significantly depressed or at risk of suicide, any gun in the home is not safe. It doesn't matter if it's locked. Kids are smart, and they find a way to get the gun. And I think we don't talk enough about mental health and especially adolescence and the risk of suicide with a gun in the home.
And just in general, in adolescence, all that's going on in your body, how even if there hasn't been a long history of depression or suicidal ideations, there's still just a lot going on when at that age when your body is developing. So for parents, being cognizant of those things and really in tune to what your kids are feeling and going through as much as possible, right?
So what should we, Dr. Peggy, what should we be teaching our kids about firearms in general? So we have a gun at home, we live in Texas or we live in New Mexico or Oklahoma, and really most of the United States, we have a gun at home. So what do we teach our children about guns once we have that gun in our house?
It is important to teach children that there are dangers with this gun at home, especially since they do sometimes have access to it, especially if parents don't put it in a safe or put it in a locked room. Mm-hmm. And so it's important to teach children how to be safe around it. So never putting your hand on the trigger, never facing the gun towards yourself. Usually we don't recommend children touching the gun at all, but, you know, teaching the children about the dangers of gun and how to be safe from it is very important.
Wow. And when we talk about sort of schools and guns, are there rules that we should be using around children when we talk about schools and guns? Dr. Bikini?
I don't know. By rules per se, I mean kids shouldn't have guns at school.
Right.
And,
That's a law. Some might call it a law.
And, you know, I think what's going to be really interesting with this next legislative session, because, you know, the Senate has had a special hearing. The governor's talked a lot about school safety and what we're going to do to try to keep kids safe at school. I think it's going to be a really interesting conversation to see what are some of the policy changes that may happen this next legislative session around this issue. Of course, you know, I never like linking mental health with violence. Most individuals who are, having mental health needs are actually not violent at all. But I am hearing a lot of our legislators talk about how they want to improve, you know, the support for kids, you know, make sure that we can use trauma-informed care, that we can actually provide more school mental health resources.
This is interesting what you're saying, though, right, Dr. Bikini, because we live in a state where we generally don't want to talk about mental health. But we also don't want to talk about the regulation of guns.
Right.
We'd rather talk about mental health than guns.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like the only way that we get our state to talk about mental health. And you and I have talked about this idea that we rank 49th in mental health funding.
Right.
And even with a huge influx of money, we went from 49th to 49th.
Right.
So we still need to talk about mental health a lot more in the state of Texas. And so if this is the way we're going to do it, I'm happy that we're talking about it.
Totally agree.
If this is the only way we can do it, let's go for it. And so we do see our state legislature talking about mental illness more.
I do, and I'm actually hopeful for that. And I think for now, for families, as you're starting back to school, I think it's important to be very proactive about talking about, you know, that you do have the support of adults and of the school. And again, I think, you know, a lot of these things that we see and actually even problems with mental health does come around bullying. And so there actually are a lot of tips about talking to your children about bullying now. There are tips for if you think your child's being bullied, if your child is actually causing the bullying. But I'd be proactive about it. So, you know, we're tweeting out resources about how to help your child with bullying, with, you know, making sure you're walking back and forth to school safely. I mean, so many different things. But I was wondering if maybe, you know, you guys could just talk a little bit about what to do for a family who's, you know, wants to talk to their child about, you know, being bullied.
Dr. Carithan, what do when you see that there's been some bullying going on?
So I guess one of the one good way to start is to make sure that other adults at school are aware that bullying is going on. There's a lot of different ways to enforce with your child how to ask for help, who to ask for help, and then to get directly in contact with school officials in terms of what you've seen and what they can maybe.
What do you do with your kid, though, right? I mean, you're alerting other adults. You are, you know, figuring out who to contact at the school. But when you, with your own child, how do you address bullying? I mean, we see it in the movies as the dad saying, well, you need to punch back. And I'm not sure that that's the realistic way to address this.
Right. A lot of the things that you can do is talk to your child about staying safe, getting out of the situation, how to walk away, how to set boundaries clearly, telling the bully, I don't like this. I don't like how you're treating me. Other things you can do is, you know, discuss other things they can do to help them feel less isolated, other children that they have as friends.
And I think you're really hitting the nail on the head here. This isn't just something that we do starting on Wednesday because school starts. This is groundwork that we're laying year round. These are conversations that we're all having with our kids all of the time, not just during the school year, but also as we've experienced these last couple of months of summer vacation.
You ready for a little final 454?
I'm absolutely ready for you to answer in the voice of Dr. Bikini.
Oh, I will do that. One time we had a producer, do you remember Laura on the show? She used to say that when Dr. Bikini spoke, it was like hearing a smile over the air. Dr. Bikini, isn't that nice?
That was really nice. Yeah, yes, I miss her.
All right, so final 454. Dr. Kirthan gets our first question.
First question, your favorite toy to play with when you were a child?
This is a really inventive one. I had a blue teddy bear named Blue Bear.
Blue Bear. Oh, Blue Bear.
All the things we come up with.
Dr. Peggy, what was your favorite toy?
I actually had a Sonic Hedgehog stuffed animal that my brother won for me in the rodeo. So
oh, wow. The Houston Rodeo? Mm-hmm. Wow. And then Dr. Bikini?
Well, mine was a favorite little stethoscope that I would wear.
Well, no, that's your favorite joke. But it was actually my strawberry shortcake collection. Oh, I was obsessed with strawberry shortcakes.
Me too, Dr. Mm-hmm. Bikini.
I was trying to imitate you.
No, that was pretty good. Yeah.
No, it wasn't. It was horrible,
I'd give it about a 4.
Yeah.
I enjoyed
not very
it.
Good. It wasn't very good.
Next question. What did you want to be when you were growing up?
Dr. Peggy? What did you want to be?
Dr. Peggy.
I actually wanted to be a teacher, which as a pediatric teacher. Resident, I'm kind of doing already. So,
Dr. Okay. Kirthan?
I wanted to be on TV.
On TV?
Yeah.
Now you're on the radio.
This is as close as I've gotten so far.
I always say I have a face for radio, right? But you have a face for TV, though, Dr.
That's
Kirthan.
Sweet,
you could actually
you.
Do it. So, and Dr. Bikini, your favorite... what are we saying?
What did I want to be when I was...
You wanted to be the governor of Louisiana.
I did. I really did.
Yeah. So, there you go.
And I still say hope is not lost for that, Dr. Bikini. Next, your favorite book to read as a child.
Dr. Kirthan, favorite book.
Mine was the Harry Potter series.
Oh,
very predictable.
Dr. Peggy?
She actually took my answer as well.
Harry Potter, huh?
Wow.
So I was just in London, by the way, and I saw the Harry Potter plays. You know,
that's awesome.
Yeah, so that was part one
and
part two.
He spent half of his time in London seeing the plays.
At the plays. And then,
well, that sounds wonderful.
Dr. Bikini's favorite book, To Kill a Mockingbird.
God, good memory. Perfect.
Yeah, well,
but I did love Harry Potter. I just was a lot older. I was reading the last one when I was on call as a third-year resident.
Very good. Dr. Katie, what was your favorite book growing up?
So you're probably going to find this shocking. I wasn't really, into reading, per se. I remember the book I read that really kind of changed everything for me was The Day No Pigs Would Die. It was terrible.
The Day No Pigs Would Die?
Yes.
I don't know that book at all.
I cried. It was terrible.
Final, Dr. Peggy, your favorite TV show when you were growing up?
It has to be Friends.
Friends? Dr. Kirthan?
Oh, gosh. Barney.
Barney?
When I was young.
Oh,
yes. I had a little brother. We used to watch Barney together.
Dr. Bikini?
Oh, when I was in high school, our whole family watched The X-Files together, and I was completely obsessed.
Oh, wow. And what was your favorite, Dr. McConnell?
Good family bonding time. I would say 8 is Enough.
8 is Enough.
Do you remember that show?
Oh, absolutely. I remember. Because who's the daughter was, what's her name?
Well, there were 8.
No, but the good-looking daughter. What was her name? I can't remember.
Have to IMDb it after the
Jessica
show.
Jessica Biel.
There you go.
They were all attractive. The whole family was very attractive. So, hey, that's it for our show. Hug your kids. And we do this for children. We hope you do it as well. And we'll see you next time here, Growing Up in America, Pacifica Radio.